Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. If you'd like to call into the show, the phone number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. If you're watching the mainstream so-called news reports of current events today, you might be thinking the country has gone mad. Seemingly endless social justice protests erupt into violent unrest and riots, while leftist mayors and governors call for defunding, hobbling, and even eliminating law enforcement, and at the same time ordering their law enforcement personnel to stand down and let the rioters alone. People who speak out against the protesters and rioters are bullied, intimidated, threatened, beaten, and in some cases murdered. At times, they are also charged with committing crimes by leftist district attorneys who refuse to charge or drop charges against rioters. And while the mainstream Marxist media and leftist politicians cheer on the rioters and protesters, portraying them as valiant social justice warriors, no effort whatsoever is made to curb any of this civil unrest on the grounds that these social gatherings are likely spreading the dreaded coronavirus. Yet, these same people are hysterically calling for increased lockdowns and sheltering in place, along with the closing of schools, churches, bars, clubs, sporting events, amusement parks, beaches, restaurants, spas, nail salons, you name it, so many other businesses, which is destroying our economy and ruining people's lives, and all being done on the grounds that they are causing increased infection with the virus. A little bit of hypocrisy there, huh? The rise in reported cases of coronavirus, or COVID-19 as it is also known, is undoubtedly the result of a massive increase in testing going on across the country. In fact, more testing is being done here in the U.S. than anywhere else in the world. Nevertheless, the hysterical mainstream media and their puppet masters among our ruling elites are equating this with increased death rates, despite the fact that death rates have been dropping in most places. Also, there's evidence that there are testing errors and fraud occurring. For example, you probably have heard about the surge of coronavirus cases in Florida. In an article, July 24, 2020, on the website naturalnews.com, it is reported that people show up at the many new testing sites in Florida to get tested, fill out a form, and then wind up leaving before ever getting tested because the lines are too long. Later, these same people receive notifications by mail or phone that they have tested positive, even though they never got tested. Fox 35 news program in Florida reported that some 300 of these testing sites were reporting 100% positive tests, a scientific impossibility. And there's growing evidence that many deaths attributed solely to coronavirus are, in fact, primarily from other causes, like vehicular accidents, heart and kidney disease, and so on. Part of the new legislation passed by Congress as pandemic economic assistance includes increased money through Medicare for deaths attributed to the virus. Do you think that's an incentive for hospitals and doctors to attribute patients' deaths to coronavirus? As Vice President Mike Pence, part of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, pointed out recently, COVID-19 is three times as infectious as the flu. Hence its rapid spread around the globe. But most of those dying from it are people with weakened immune systems and underlying health conditions. Some 80% of those who get the disease have no or mild symptoms. We need to do what we can to protect those who are vulnerable, take all reasonable precautions to prevent infection, and let people get on with their lives. Here's an audio clip from the Dace show on Blaze TV, July 15th, where Steve Dace looks at some of the nonsensical things being promoted and formally promoted related to the COVID-19 pandemic. Play soundbite one, please.
That's what I want to do this morning. We're going to have a conversation about lies, damned lies, and coronavirus. Because you are being scammed. In fact, we are being lied to, I think, right now, more than at any point in American history. How are we being scammed? Well, let me count the ways. In fact, what I'm about to show you are just things that have popped into my feed or in the news within the last week or less. So this is not like from the beginning. This is just in the last few days. Let's begin with scam number one. Saw plenty of this last week, and I'm going to single out Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith. The Ohio State or the United States is one of the worst in the world, he said, at handling coronavirus. And he's not alone in saying this. But here are the facts. The U.S. is currently testing more per day than any nation on earth, about 600,000 people a day. We lead the world in total recoveries from coronavirus by more than 200,000. We have fewer deaths per million population than Italy, Spain, France, and the U.K. But we do have more cases per 1 million population than any other industrialized nation on earth. In other words, we're testing more, so we're finding more, but what we're finding, we are handling just fine. Does that sound to you like we're handling this the worst on earth? Let's get to the next scam that's come up in just the last few days. Oh, this guy was a favorite, even by some in conservative media. Former FDA bigwig Scott Gottlieb, who has made a career out of pimping the panic porn, putting out there that the U.S. approach on COVID is a tale of two cities. Some states like Connecticut, New York, Massachusetts, they sought to crush the virus. Some like Florida, Texas, Arizona, sought the Swedish model and tried to manage the spread of the less vulnerable. Now, that's not even true. Florida, Texas, and Arizona all did far more lockdown than Sweden ever did. That characterization, by the way, is not even true. It's just not even true. That's a lie. That's a lie by itself. But let's continue with the rest of Gottlieb's gobsmack. Without a more uniform U.S. approach, it'll be hard for either strategy to work. Well, let's give you some facts, shall we? Let's take a look at this. Deaths per million population among the crushed the virus states and the managed the spread states. Look at the difference. Good night between New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Texas, Florida, and Arizona. The reverse of what Scott Gottlieb says is true. The reverse. But let me give you some more. It is now mid-July. Here's how New York crushed the virus. It is mid-July and still one out of every four deaths in America is from New York. In mid-July, one out of every four coronavirus deaths is still from New York. That's how high the carnage was in that state compared to anywhere else. Furthermore, the combined deaths in Texas, Florida, and Arizona from coronavirus are about one-third of the total deaths out of New York, despite triple the population. I don't know what Scott Gottlieb got his PhD in, but it should have been BS. Next scam. Maybe you saw this over the weekend. Texas Governor Greg Abbott warns of possible lockdown if Texans don't wear face masks. So over the weekend, I went and found this study from the Center for Infectious Disease Research at the University of Minnesota, chaired by Dr. Michael Osterholm, who has served in the last five presidential administrations. They took a long look at the question of whether or not mask mandates as a public policy, whether or not they work against the spread of coronavirus. And yes, I know they did this back in April. Here's why it's probably more accurate. Because they did this before everything was politicized. Right now, I have no clue what's true. I could find a study that says literally anything on masks right now. That you should cut your face off, never wear a mask, mask your body. Everything is so politicized right now. I don't know what data is true right now from which institution and which isn't. So this comes from April. Before we went into full-born panic porn and let's have a civil war over coronavirus mode, here were the findings of this study published over at the University of Minnesota. Zero evidence that cloth and surgical masks help to stop the public spread of coronavirus, meaning as a public policy, not necessarily with individuals, but as a mask mandate, a public policy, zero evidence that this worked. Starting in Asia, it didn't work. It doesn't even recommend they are used in close quarters for medical personnel at all. Says only the N95, that's the respirator mask, recommended for medical personnel, that has about 95% efficacy in stopping the spread of coronavirus. It goes on to say there is no evidence yet that N95 works for massive public control, and says they're too vital for medical personnel in close corners of virus to waste them just in case, which makes me think that we just haven't studied it because they don't want to risk running out of these respirators in case they do actually work. That's my own personal read on this.
He has some other things to say on his program, but I think you get the gist of what he was getting at here. A lot of dispute, a lot of disagreement about different things. I had the N95 masks, medical masks, before this thing broke out as part of my own personal preparedness program, and I've been using them. They are kind of hard to breathe through at times, but I wear masks if it's required. I don't mind it. You can blend in, but he's got a point here. If you're thinking that these masks are going to prevent the transmission of this illness, at least on a broad scale, I think you're going to be sadly disappointed. As we'll see, though, the pandemic hysteria and nationwide civil unrest related to the George Floyd murder in Minneapolis over the Memorial Day weekend, well, the George Floyd death, the police officers involved have been charged in connection with his with murder or connection to it, particularly Derek Chauvin, who was kneeling on George Floyd's neck for more than 8 minutes. But that's not enough to satisfy. It was the catalyst. This thing proved a catalyst for these nationwide protests. And as I said, it's all part of planned and well-financed chaos intended to demoralize people, promote a political power grab, and radically transform this nation. The shocking thing you have to realize is there are very rich, powerful people and organizations, corporations, nonprofits, and other entities, including, I'm sure, foreign governments and organizations, putting money into and otherwise promoting this chaos. That's why it's so widespread. They seek to radically transform America and Western civilization into their twisted visions of world government, with societal elites staying fabulously wealthy and powerful, and the rest of us as their serfs and slaves. Although they will tell you it will all be for everyone's benefit and that you'll be better off in the end. These powerful elites are aligned with communist radicals seeking worldwide socialism and their own form of world government. In short, what's at stake here is the survival of Western civilization. Many people can't grasp this, don't think that this could really be the case. But if you look around, there's ample evidence. The left is making a major effort here. The election of Donald Trump sent these people into a dither, and they are desperate. The question is, will they succeed? Let's listen to a segment of a recent Rush Limbaugh program about this. Please play soundbite 2.
It's been said of the last 8 presidential elections that it's the most important election in the history of the country, or it's the most important election of our lifetimes. And they're saying it about this one. But, you know, it may actually be true about this one, but because it's been said about all previous elections, a lot of people tune that out. But yet, we're out there saying this is the most important election of our lifetimes. This one probably is. And the reason that I say this, and I'd have to double-check my history on this, and the reason I say that is a lot of people make the mistake of assuming that things that are happening in their lifetimes are happening for the first time, that they've never happened. This just happens to be a psychological quirk of humanity. Everybody believes, for example, that the times they are living in are the worst they've ever been, or in some cases, the best. A lot of people think that things happening in their lifetimes have never, ever happened before. That's actually not possible. There isn't anything happening today that hasn't happened in one way or another in the past. But I'm trying to think, have we actually had one of the two major political parties running on a Marxist communist agenda? The idea that we've had communist candidates before is not new. We have. We've had Marxist candidates before. The difference is they were perceived as jokes. They didn't have a prayer of winning. But now that's all out the window. Today, this election does in fact feature a Marxist communist agenda. It is the agenda of Bernie Sanders. That's the deal. Bernie Sanders goes away, stops contesting for the nomination, gives it to Biden, but his agenda is adopted for the campaign. And it's based on the fact that the Democrats believe that Twitter is America, that Twitter is a majority of the thinking of this country. So we've ever had a presidential election where one of the major contending parties has as its objective to overthrow the Constitution of the United States and to rebuild America into something it was never founded to be. That's what's at stake in this election.
If Democrat Joe Biden, whose dementia seems to be getting worse by the day, is elected president, he will be a placeholder, as Limbaugh calls it, a figurehead. The real power will be held and wielded by others. These are the radical left politicians and activists who today control the Democratic Party and businesses and political elites, the ruling classes, who want to do away with our constitutional republic and transform America into part of a world government that will enslave the masses, that is, you and me. Prominent among these elites is billionaire leftist and Hungarian-born immigrant, the former Georgi Swartz, now known as George Soros. Soros being the name his family changed to, and meaning to soar in Esperanto, the invented artificial language which, as was stated about it for a YouTube video, is a, quote, visionary metaphor for universalism, for neutrality, for technologies that break down barriers, for multiculturalism and harmony, end quote. People watching the communist Antifa, short for anti-fascist, groups rioting along with Black Lives Matter organizations should know that Soros' network of tax-free, supposedly charitable organizations has given more than $30 million to the Black Lives Matter movement, which presents itself as a civil rights movement, but which in reality is a Marxist political movement. And this is only a tiny portion of the many millions Soros pours into leftist groups and organizations. Along with this, the leftist Ford Foundation has partnered with another group to raise $100 million for BLM. BLM officials and operatives are awash in cash these days, and that is how they are able to engage in such widespread demonstrating, protests, and rioting with their also well-funded Antifa allies across the nation. It's ironic, but understandable, given the adulation and fawning news coverage provided to BLM and Antifa in the mainstream Marxist media, that major corporations, political, educational, and social organizations around the country are lining up to bow down to BLM and give them even more money, despite the fact that they are a Marxist organization demanding an end to capitalism and pledging to radically transform America. As the head of their New York chapter stated recently, if we don't give them what they want, they will burn down the system and take it. And what is BLM's answer to the alleged systemic racism and white supremacy in America? Systemic racism and black supremacy, special preferential treatment for blacks over others, with such things as free college for all blacks, reparations for blacks only. Never mind that many blacks living in America today have no relatives who were slaves here, or that many whites living here have no slave-owning ancestors or even relatives who lived in America when slavery existed here centuries ago. As Natalie Winters writes in an article published June 22, 2020 on the website thenationalpulse.com, quote, the elimination of capitalism, the foundational economic and political system of the West, is yet another radical goal BLM seeks to materialize. Under the direction of self-declared Marxists, BLM also seeks to disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure and erase history with its activists violently removing statues and monuments, both linchpins of cultural revolutions. Close quote. Here's some audio from Bill O'Reilly's No Spin News about the funding of BLM. Play soundbite three, please.
Black Lives Matter is a slogan. Nothing wrong with the slogan. Black Lives Matter is also an organization, okay? The organization is formally called Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation. Let me repeat. Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation. That's the organization. They get millions of dollars, but they are not approved as a tax-exempt organization. So if you give them money on paper, you could not deduct it. So according to the Washington Times investigation, George Soros, since 2015, has given Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation $33 million. And on paper, he can't write it off, but he can. Now, here it comes. So the Black Lives Matter Global Network, okay, incorporated in Delaware, Joe Biden's home state, has forged an alliance with a group called Thousand Currents, 1,000 Currents, C-U-R-R-E-N-T-S, 1,000 Currents. They're in Oakland, California. They are run by a guy named Paul Strasberg. Let's see Paul. Far left, way, way left. Worked for the Ford Foundation, which is a huge benefactor of far left things. He is a Peace Corps, former Peace Corps volunteer. He runs 1,000 Currents. They have made an alliance with the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation. And because of that alliance, all right, your donation is tax deductible. It's very, very complicated, okay? So I'm going to quote fiscal sponsorships. It's so common. 1,000 Currents is sponsoring financially, the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation. Because they're sponsoring it, the government allows you to write off the donations. It goes through the 1,000 Currents organization to Black Lives Matter Foundation. Now, what happens to the money? Ready? 25% of the millions of dollars that go into the Black Lives Matter Global Foundation is spent on salaries and benefits. A quarter, but it gets better. 46% goes to consultant fees. That could be anybody. That could be your mom, your daughter, your son. You're consulting. You're telling the Black Lives Matter Foundation what they should do. 71% of all the revenue either goes to salaries, benefits, or consulting fees. And that money is just given to people. Okay? 71%. That means 29% actually help, or potentially, God knows what they do. They print up signs, they get buses, they pay people to demonstrate. We all know that's what they do. But the vast majority of the money goes to the Black Lives Matter people in the foundation. What? And they're shrewd. Nobody knows this. Where's the IRS? If Soros gave him $33 million, where's that money? IRS? We don't know of any audits of the 1,000 Currents organization or the Black Lives Matter Foundation. I mean, I thought Al Sharpton ran a scam in New York. This is unbelievable. So all the Hollywood pinheads and the corporate idiots and everybody else writing checks. That money's going right into these people's pockets. And they're Marxists.
So as you can see, it's possible to get rich and stay very rich being a Marxist today while you demand doing away with capitalism. Just look at Bernie Sanders and his relatives. Do you think it's time we began looking at the massive frauds being perpetrated by these tax-exempt nonprofits funding the radical left's political movements and agendas? Don't expect to see much about this in the mainstream Marxist media, which Soros also helps fund and holds influence over, as he does with the Democratic Party, the mainstream media being the Democratic Party's propaganda wing. As I've said numerous times, self-righteous hatred and the intolerance that accompanies it, fraud, that is, deception, and hypocrisy are the hallmarks of the political left. As former Marxist David Horowitz of the Freedom Center has pointed out, the Democratic Party of today is the Communist Party. And this is something that's occurred over decades, this takeover. So you will understand what is happening better if you realize that the Democratic Party is the political wing of the Communist Party, and the mainstream media is the propaganda wing of the Communist Party. The thing that's hard for many people to grasp is that so many of the people involved in these groups enjoy enormous wealth and privilege while they work assiduously to deny you from accumulating your own wealth, however small that wealth may be, and having a better material life for yourself and your loved ones under our capitalist system. Besides fabulously wealthy leftist individuals like Soros pouring vast amounts of money into the left's causes today through nonprofits like his Open Society Foundations and the Ford Foundation, there are also globalist leaders and major corporations around the world helping to fund the left. And as we shall see shortly, Communist China is using its newly acquired economic power to influence American politics. Part of Soros's efforts to radically transform the United States is what's former New York Mayor, city mayor and advisor to President Trump, Rudy Giuliani, has called Soros' clandestine takeover of district attorney offices, which was the title on a July 16th episode of Giuliani's Common Sense podcast program. In the program's subtitle, it is stated, quote, Rudy Giuliani lays out George Soros' plan to alter our system of justice by investing millions in electing criminally friendly, incompetent district attorneys, close quote. This plot has been going on for years and is reaping incredible results for the left. Kim Gardner, St. Louis district attorney, refused to prosecute BLM protesters who broke down a gate and trespassed on two attorneys' property, allegedly threatening to kill their dog and making other threats against them. Gardner has charged the attorneys with felonies for brandishing firearms in defense of themselves and their property. Soros has contributed hundreds of thousands to Gardner's political campaigns. Likewise, in Chicago, District Attorney Kim Fox, who dismissed charges against leftist actor Jussie Smollett for allegedly perpetrating a hoax that he was threatened with lynching by two men in pro-Trump MAGA hats, has reportedly received $400,000 from Soros. Many left-leaning globalist elites and big corporations are doing business with Red China, thanks to the many advantages and economic opportunities made available to the People's Republic of China in recent years, much of it by the United States, which it was claimed would serve to democratize that communist country. But it hasn't. It's obvious the Communist Chinese Party, which controls mainland China with an iron hand, also has a major interest in promoting leftist causes in the West, and particularly in the United States. Though lately George Soros has taken to criticizing Red China and even siding with the Trump administration's stance on some aspects of U.S.-China relations, I believe this is a ruse meant to confuse people about what his true intentions are. You hear and read a lot from the globalists and their minions about the vaunted New World Order, their long hoped-for vision of a globalist political, economic, and of a global political, economic, and social system, that is, world government, that would benefit the ruling elites and enslave the rest of us, ostensibly for our own good, according to the views of these elites. Soros has praised Communist China as a model for the rest of the world. The website newspunch.com, on December 4, 2016, carried an article titled, "George Soros Announces China Must Lead the New World Order." In that article, it is stated, George Soros laid out the global elite's plan for ushering in what he called a new world order during an interview with the Financial Times. According to Soros, China must lead this new world order, quote, creating it and owning it, unquote, in the same way that the United States, quote, owns the current order, close quote. U.S. Attorney William Barr gave a speech July 16th this year at the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Museum, in which he discussed the threat China poses today to the West. It was a nearly hour-long speech. I've edited it down to less than half that time. I hope that I have captured the key points. Here is that recording. Play sound by four, please.
I'm privileged to speak here today about what may prove to be the most important issue for our nation and the world in the 21st century, and that is the United States' response in the global ambitions to the global ambitions of the Chinese Communist Party. The CCP rules with an iron fist over one of the great ancient civilizations of the world. It seeks to leverage the immense power, productivity, and ingenuity of the Chinese people to overthrow the rule-based international system and to make the world safe for dictatorship. How the United States responds to this challenge will have historic implications and will determine whether the United States and its liberal democratic allies will continue to shape their own destiny, or whether the CCP and its autocratic tributaries will continue to control the future. You know, since the 1890s, at least, the United States has been the technological leader of the world. And from that prowess has come our prosperity, the opportunity for generations of Americans, and our security. It's because of that that we were able to play such a pivotal role in world history by turning back the threat of fascism and the threat of communism. What's at stake these days is whether we can maintain that leadership position and that technological leadership. Are we going to be the generation that has allowed that to be stolen, which is really stealing the future of our children and our grandchildren? Several weeks ago, the National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien spoke about the CCP's ideology and global ambitions. He declared, and I agree, that the days of American passivity and naivete regarding the People's Republic of China are over. And last week, the FBI director, Chris Wray, described how the CCP pursues its ambitions through the nefarious and even illegal conduct, including industrial espionage, theft, extortion, cyber attacks, and malign influence activities. In the coming days, you will hear from Secretary Mike Pompeo, who will sum up what is at stake for the United States and the free world. My speech and Mike Pompeo's speech will encourage the American people to reevaluate their relationship with China so long as it continues to be ruled by the Chinese Communist Party. It is fitting that we're here today at the Ford Presidential Museum. Gerald Ford served in the highest echelons of the government at the dawn of America's reengagement with China, which began obviously with President Nixon in 1972. And 3 years later, in 1975, President Ford visited China for a summit with PRC leaders, including Mao Zedong. At the time, it was unthinkable that China would emerge after the Cold War as a near peer competitor of the United States. And even then, there were signs of China's immense latent power. In the joint report of their visit to China in 1972, House Majority Leader Hale Boggs and then Minority Leader Gerald Ford wrote, "If she manages to achieve as she aspires, China in the next half century can emerge as a self-sufficient power of a billion people." This last impression of the reality of China's colossal potential is perhaps the most vivid of our journey. As our small party traveled through that boundless land, this sense of a giant stirring, a dragon waking, gave us much to ponder. It is now nearly 50 years later, and the prescient ponderings of these two congressmen have come to pass. Deng Xiaoping, whose economic reform launched China's remarkable rise, had a famous motto, "Hide your strength, bide your time." That is precisely what China has done. China's economy has quietly grown from about 2% of the world's GDP in 1980 to nearly 20% today. And by some estimates based on purchasing power parity, the Chinese economy is already larger than ours. The General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping, who has centralized power to a degree not seen since the dictatorship of Mao Zedong, now speaks openly of China moving closer to the center stage, building a socialism that is superior to capitalism, and replacing the American dream with the Chinese solution. China is no longer hiding its strength, nor biding its time. From the perspective of its communist rulers, China's time has arrived. The People's Republic of China is now engaged in an economic blitzkrieg, an aggressive, orchestrated, whole-of-government, indeed whole-of-society campaign to seize the commanding heights of the global economy and to surpass the United States as the world's preeminent technological superpower. Here that the PRC seeks not merely to join the ranks of other advanced industrial economies, but to replace them altogether. Made in China 2025 is the latest iteration of the PRC's state-led mercantilist economic model. For American companies in the global marketplace, free and fair competition with China has long been a fantasy. To tilt the playing field to its advantage, China's communist government has perfected a wide array of predatory and often unlawful tactics: currency manipulation, tariffs, quotas, state-led strategic investment and acquisition, theft and forced transfer of intellectual property, state subsidies, dumping, cyber attacks, and industrial espionage. About 80% of all federal economic espionage prosecutions allege conduct undertaken for the benefit of the Chinese state. And about 60% of all trade secret theft cases have been connected to China. The PRC also seeks to dominate key trade routes and infrastructure in Eurasia, Africa, and the Pacific. In the South China Sea, for example, through which about one-third of the world's maritime trade passes, the PRC has asserted expansive and historically dubious claims to nearly the entire waterway, flouted the rulings of international courts, built artificial islands, and placed military outposts on them, and harassed its neighbors' ships and fishing boats. Another ambitious project to spread its power and influence is the PRC's Belt and Roads Infrastructure Initiative. Although billed as foreign aid, in fact, these investments appear designed to serve the PRC's strategic interests and domestic economic needs. For example, the PRC has been criticized for loading poor countries up with debt, refusing to renegotiate terms, and then taking control of the infrastructure itself, as it did with the Sri Lankan port of Hambantota in 2017. This is little more than a form of modern-day colonialism. Just as consequential, however, are the PRC's plans to dominate the world's digital infrastructure through its Digital Silk Road initiative. I have previously spoken at length about the grave risks of allowing the world's most powerful dictatorship to build the next generation of global telecommunications networks known as 5G. Perhaps less widely known are the PRC's efforts to surpass the United States in other cutting-edge fields like artificial intelligence. Through innovations such as machine learning and big data, artificial intelligence allows machines to mimic human functions, such as recognizing faces, interpreting spoken words, driving vehicles, and playing games of skill, much like chess or even the more complex Chinese game of Go. In 2017, Beijing unveiled its Next Generation Artificial Intelligence Plan. a blueprint for leading the world in AI by 2030. Whichever nation emerges as the global leader in AI will be best positioned to unlock not only its considerable economic but a range of military applications, such as the use of computer vision to gather intelligence. The PRC's drive for technological supremacy is complemented by its plan to monopolize rare earth materials, which play a vital role in industries such as consumer electronics, electric vehicles, medical devices, and military hardware. According to the Congressional Research Service, from the 1960s to the 1980s, the United States led the world in rare earth production. Since then, production has shifted almost entirely to China, in large part due to the lower labor costs and lighter economic and environmental regulation. The United States is now dangerously dependent on the PRC for these essential materials. Overall, China is America's top supplier, accounting for about 80% of our imports. The risk of dependence are real. In 2010, for example, Beijing cut exports of rare earth materials to Japan after an incident involving the disputed islands in the East China Sea. The PRC could do the same to us. As China's progress in these critical sectors illustrates, the PRC's predatory economic policies are succeeding. For 100 years, America was the world's largest manufacturer, allowing us to serve as the world's arsenal of democracy. China overtook the United States in manufacturing output in 2010. The PRC is now the world's arsenal of dictatorship. No one should underestimate the ingenuity and industry of the Chinese people. At the same time, no one should doubt that America made China's meteoric rise possible. China has reaped enormous benefits from the free flow of American aid and trade. In 1980, Congress granted the PRC most favored nation trading status. In the 1990s, American companies strongly supported the PRC's accession to the World Trade Organization and the permanent normalization of trade relations. Today, U.S.-China trade totals about $700 billion. Last year, Newsweek ran a cover story titled, "How America's Biggest Companies Made China Great Again." The article details how China's communist leaders lured American business with the promise of market access, and then, having profited from American investment and know-how, turned increasingly hostile. The PRC used tariffs and quotas to pressure American companies to give up their technology and form joint ventures with Chinese companies. Regulators then discriminated against American firms using tactics like holding up permits. Yet few companies, even Fortune 500 giants, have been willing to bring formal trade complaints for fear of angering Beijing. Just as American companies have become dependent on Chinese markets, the United States as a whole now relies on the PRC for many vital goods and services. The COVID-19 pandemic has shone a spotlight on that dependency. For example, China is the world's largest producer of certain protective equipment, such as face masks and medical gowns. In March, as the pandemic spread around the world, the PRC hoarded the masks for itself, blocking producers, including American companies, from exporting them to other countries that needed it. It then attempted to exploit the shortage for propaganda purposes, shipping limited quantities of often defective equipment, and then requiring foreign leaders to publicly thank Beijing for these shipments. China's dominance of the world's markets for medical goods goes beyond masks and gowns. It has become the United States' largest supplier of medical devices, while at the same time discriminating against American medical companies in China. China's government has targeted foreign firms for greater regulatory scrutiny, instructed Chinese hospitals to buy products made in China, and pressured American firms to build factories in China where their intellectual property is more vulnerable to theft. As one expert has observed, American medical device manufacturers are effectively creating their own competitors. Having been caught covering up the coronavirus outbreak, Beijing is desperate for a public relations coup and may hope that it will be able to claim credit for any medical breakthroughs. As all of these examples should make clear, the ultimate ambition of China's rulers isn't to trade with the United States. It is to raid the United States. If you are an American business leader, appeasing the PRC may bring short-term rewards. But in the end, the PRC's goal is to replace you. As a U.S. Chamber of Commerce report put it, the belief by foreign companies that large financial investments and sharing of expertise and significant technology transfers would lead to an ever-opening China market is being replaced by boardroom banter that win-win in China means China wins twice. Although Americans hope that trade and investment would liberalize China's political system, the fundamental character of the regime has never changed. As its ruthless crackdown of Hong Kong demonstrates once again, China is no closer to democracy today than it was in 1989 when tanks confronted pro-democracy protesters in Tiananmen Square. It remains an authoritarian, one-party state in which the Chinese Communist Party wields absolute power unchecked by popular elections, the rule of law, or an independent judiciary. The CCP surveils its own people and assigns them social credit scores, employs an army of government censors, tortures dissidents, and persecutes religious and ethnic minorities, including 1 million Uyghurs detained in indoctrination and labor camps. If what happened in China stayed in China, that would be bad enough. But instead of America's changing China, China is leveraging its economic power to change America. As this administration's China strategy recognizes, the CCP's campaign to compel ideological conformity does not stop at China's borders. Rather, the CCP seeks to extend its influence around the world, including on American soil. All too often, for the sake of short-term profits, American companies have succumbed to that influence, even at the expense of freedom and openness in the United States. Sadly, examples of American business bowing to China are legion. Take Hollywood. Hollywood's actors, producers, and directors pride themselves on celebrating freedom and the human spirit. And every year at the Academy Awards, Americans are lectured about how this country falls short of Hollywood's ideals of social justice. But Hollywood now regularly censors its own movies to appease the Chinese Communist Party, the world's most powerful violator of human rights. The story of the film industry's submission to the CCP is a familiar one. In the past two decades, China has emerged as the world's largest box office. The CCP has long tightly controlled access to that lucrative market, both through quotas on American films imposed in violation of China's WTO obligations and a strict censorship regime. Increasingly, Hollywood also relies on Chinese money for financing. In 2018, films with Chinese investors accounted for 20% of the U.S. box office ticket sales, compared to only 3% 5 years earlier. But in the long run, as with other Chinese industries, the PRC may be less interested in cooperating with Hollywood than in co-opting Hollywood and eventually replacing it with its own homegrown movie productions. To accomplish this, the CCP has been following its usual modus operandi. By imposing a quota on American films, the CCP pressures Hollywood studios to form joint ventures with Chinese companies, who then gain U.S. technology and know-how. As one Chinese film executive recently put it, everything we learned from Hollywood. Notably, in 2019, 8 of the 10 top-grossing films in China were produced in China. Hollywood is far from alone in kowtowing to the PRC. America's big tech companies have also allowed themselves to become pawns of Chinese influence. In the year 2000, when the United States normalized trade relations with China, President Clinton hailed the new century as one in which liberty will be spread by cell phone and cable modem. Instead, over the course of the next decade, American companies such as Cisco helped the Chinese communists build the Great Firewall of China, the world's most sophisticated system for internet surveillance and censorship. Over the years, corporations such as Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, and Apple have shown themselves all too willing to collaborate with the CCP. For example, Apple recently removed the news app Quartz from its app store in China after the Chinese government complained about the coverage of Hong Kong democracy proof. If Disney and other American corporations continue to bow to Beijing, they risk undermining both their own future competitiveness and prosperity, as well as the classical liberal order that has allowed them to thrive. During the Cold War, Lewis Powell, later Justice Powell, sent an important memorandum to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. He noted that the free enterprise system was under unprecedented attack and urged American companies to do more to preserve it. The time has come, he said. Indeed, it is long overdue for the wisdom, ingenuity, and resources of American business to be marshaled against those who would destroy it. So too today. The American people are more attuned than ever to the threat that the Chinese Communist Party poses not only to our way of life, but to our very lives and livelihoods. And they will increasingly call out corporate appeasement. If individual companies are afraid to take a stand, there is strength in numbers. As Justice Powell wrote, strength lies in organization, in careful long-range planning and implementation, in consistency of action over an indefinite period of years, in the scale of financing available only through joint efforts, and in the political power available only through united action and national organization. The CCP has launched an orchestrated campaign across all of its many tentacles in Chinese government and society to exploit the openness of our institutions in order to destroy them, to secure a world of freedom and prosperity for our children and our grandchildren. The free world will need its own version of a whole-of-society approach in which the public and private sectors maintain their separation but work together collaboratively to resist domination and to win the contest for the commanding heights of the global economy.
As the Attorney General points out, all these U.S. corporations and wealthy elites are making lots of money doing lucrative business with China, and in order to continue, bow down to and praise at every opportunity the Chinese Communist Party and nation, while at the same time doing its bidding to disparage, denigrate the USA, all the while ignoring the fact that Red China intends to one day take us over and destroy us. It all seems like madness, doesn't it? Soviet Russian leader Vladimir Lenin made a famous statement about capitalism. There are several English interpretations of that statement, but the one I like the best is, quote, when it comes time to hang the capitalists, they'll be eager to sell us the rope, unquote. In the U.S. today, we've come a long way down that road to our self-destruction at the hands of the communists and their globalist allies. If you read George Orwell's epic novel 1984 about Britain having become a totalitarian socialist state, you may recall one of the slogans the totalitarian Communist Party used to control the masses, and that was, "Ignorance is strength." The leftist globalist forces hard at work seeking to overthrow our way of life and enslave us are counting on mass ignorance of their true intentions, paving their way to enslaving us. We cannot let that happen. That's it for another show. We'll be back 2 weeks from today at this same time slot. Take care and good night.